On January 17th, 1972, it was the most important day of my life. It was the only day of my life, in one sense. What happened was is that I had either achieved everything I wanted in life or got close enough to empathize myself in the position of having achieved what I wanted. And all of it was vanity. All of it was silly. All of it was ridiculous. All of it was boring. All of it was nothing. And I heard a man speak much the same way that I speak, a lot of the same words. His name was Norman Grubb. And he's not a religious guy, he's just sort of a little old guy that talks with a British accent and smells bad. He always dresses terribly, has no sense of style. He has no sense of color. You ever know anybody that are probably colorblind and so they got... Well, I can see some of you are. But he was totally disheveled and messed up looking and crumpled. It looks like he slept for 4 days in the suit he had on. But he said these words which were mind-blowing. He said, "It's finished." He said, "Your home is not here. Your home is somewhere else." He said that your life up to this point has been a lie. And he said, "Truth isn't an idea, it's a person." On and on and on. He spoke a lot in cliches. But I said to myself, I said, "God, if you're..." I was an atheist or an agnostic, depending on what time of day it was. And I said, "God, if you're real and what this insignificant guy is talking about, then that's what I want, and I don't care what it cost me." I admitted the fact that I had no belief in God. I knew intuitively that it didn't matter what anybody said they believed or not believed. But something happened with regard to the idea that there was something so compelling about what he said that night. And there was about 150 people in the room. I was sitting on the floor amongst a group of people sort of as ugly as you are. And I left time. And from the people's perception around me, they told me later, all I was doing for the next hour and a half in time is I sat there and cried. Not sobbing, but I just sat there with my eyes sort of with tears running down my face. But where I wasn't there, I mean, I wasn't even in this physical body. And by the grace of God, he gave me a foretaste through that time of the glory of God. And I saw and knew, more than saw, I knew that everything in the universe made sense. That I understood why everything was like it was. And there's no way to describe. Words always fail. I've always tried to describe this experience, and it always fails. But there was a sense of light, but light like nothing you'd ever seen or I'd ever seen before, because it was a light that emanated everywhere at all points with the same intensity. There was no source of the light. There was a sense of being totally and completely accepted. There was a sense of love, but not like we use that word. It was a sense of purpose, maybe, or I don't know. I don't know how to even describe that part of it. There was a point in which the idea of thinking about what would happen next was as foreign as the idea of trying to live underwater without any air. I mean, it was so totally, it was impossible to think about tomorrow. It was impossible to think about what was going to happen next. Do you understand me? I didn't go anywhere. I mean, I didn't like have an astral body experience and leave. Only to the extent that when it first began, when I first said, God, that's what I want, I don't care what it costs me, if you're real. There was a sense of movement, but it was towards, before there was all of the light and the wonder and the peace and the joy and the love, there was a sense of being engulfed in total blackness, but that was only maybe a hundredth millionth of a second. I don't know how to explain it. It was like, it was even in that instant of time, that hundred millionth of a second, I could have turned from that blackness. In other words, at that point, if there was anything in this life that I wanted, I knew, I somehow became intuited that I could have turned and not experienced that blackness. But once I embraced it or let it embrace me, then the instantaneous response from, and the blackness was bad news, I mean, we're talking big time bad news. The instantaneous response outside of the blackness was this peace, joy, love, certainty, knowledge, everything in the universe made sense. And I thought, I mean, it's what I'd been searching for all my life, and it came with no effort. Now the scriptures call that something, that experience something, that in, the other thing was, is that it was, I had no independent identity, and that's hard, that's the word that's almost impossible to describe. I was part of all of that light, all of that peace. I was that peace, I was that light, I was that joy. I wasn't independent from it, analyzing it, or looking at it, or trying to figure it out, I just was. Of course, that same experience happened 8 years later when I was held hostage and I had a gun in my mouth. And it was a duplication of that experience. The same damn thing happened again. Except this time I was in the plushest hotel, one of the plushest hotels in the world. It even had, they had gold fixtures on the toilet and on the faucets and stuff. And it was on a peninsula jutting out into the Mediterranean, the beauty of beauties. And the guy now that was talking to me and had the gun in my mouth was, you know, it was Barbara's brother. And he looked like he could have been, you know, he's a very good-looking guy. He could have stepped out of Gentleman's Quarterly, and he was very articulate. And
He just, in this case, now he didn't tell me any great deal good words of wisdom. He said, "You're going to die, motherfucker." Now, when I experienced the duplicate, the same thing, I entered the glory of God. The only thing that I did, in either one of those cases, and in innumerable little teeny sort of short visits, is accept my death. It's no big, I didn't have to. You know, I'd gone through all the yoga trips and all of the Eastern religious philosophies where you arrive at that point by some great discipline, of some great mental strategies and concentration, and learning how to concentrate. And I'd done all the rest of the stuff to try to, you get a little ways and I see a little bit. But the only thing I did in these two instances, which were words fail. They just totally fail. The only thing I did was say, "Father, I accept my death." And you got to understand that in this position, there was no. I didn't have any discussions about theology. I didn't know the meaning of any Greek or Hebrew words. And the first time I'd never even, if I'd looked at the Bible at all, it was only as a weapon to how to embarrass Christians. I used to be a hypnotist, and I studied hypnosis. And I'd hypnotize, in one case, this one guy that was in the unit that I was with him, working for the government, I hypnotized him all the time because he was this perfect little Christian from West Covina, California. Ronald Nearing. And I'd get him wiped out drunk by having him drink a glass of water. And I took great delight in having him make a total ass of himself to make sure that his, to prove to myself that his words and his actions weren't real. I mean, it was like a made-up thing. But in this state of being, there was no need to prove anything. There was no need to justify anything. There was no need to look for anything. There was no need to want anything. There was no need to desire anything. It was just being. And it was being in a state of perfect love, perfect joy, perfect peace. Oh yeah, and the biggie was, is that it looked like a cloud. I mean, it looked like, you know how when you every once in a while it's at the right time of the year because of the angle of the sun to the earth, if you're flying, you're above the clouds and there's a moment where there's a magical quality about the sunlight hitting the top of the clouds. You can't see anything else, but it's not like normally. Not all the time that's pretty, but there are times when it's awesome because of the wavelength of the light. I'm sure those of you that have flown a lot have seen it. Maybe if you've flown once, you've seen it. But it had something to do with a cloud. It had something to do with light. It had something to do with shining. And it had a great deal to do with love and joy and peace. Now, the scriptures call that experience that I had the glory of God. The glory of God. I've seen it on occasion, just hints at it. Even when I'm talking in here, it's like you see a little bit of hint of cloud over. Not cloud being, you know, our theology thus far said if the cloud's down, it's out, so you wait. So they'll go above the clouds. So you think clouds are kind of bad, but this is a good cloud. Trust me on this one. It's not a pink cloud. It could be a pink cloud. A little fluffy pink cloud that you can go float off on. Care of the Care Bears.
What a Care Bear.
It was a lovely pink cloud.
That's the way he taught me about it.
Who's laughing?
Okay, glory of God.
Glory of God, fuck you, fuck you, let's go.
I'm with you.
Nowhere in the scriptures is the glory of God ever once separated from Jesus Christ. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. Transformed means to be transfigured. Transfigured means to become the glory of God. When Christ was transfigured on the Mount of Transfiguration, he and the two of the disciples walked up, three of the disciples walked up on top of the hill, the mountain. And Christ, because he had completed the course that was set before him, was transfigured. He was glorified in the sight of the disciples. And Christ became or inherited or had or possessed the glory that he possessed from the beginning. That's all you're here for, is to be glorified. The scriptures, if you look and do a scripture search on the word glory or glorified, you find out from the very beginning that was man's only function was to be glorified. And the Lord's Prayer, Jesus said this incredible thing, not the disciples' prayer, the Lord's Prayer in John 17. First of all, he said that, let me read it to you. Father, the hour is come. Glorify thy Son, that thy Son also may glorify thee. As thou hast given him power over all flesh, that he should give eternal life to as many as thou hast given him, and this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. I have glorified thee on the earth. I have finished the work which thou gavest me to do. And over in the same chapter he said, and the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them. Now, when you're in a position of need, or a position of debt, or a position of angst, or suffering, or fear, or anxiety, or frustration, you cannot possibly believe. I mean, if somebody comes along and tells you that the glory of God is why you're here, yeah, you go, yeah, sure. Sort of like Gideon, when the angel of God met Gideon. The Midianites were out after him. He was grinding wheat in the wine press because he was hiding out And the angel of God came to him and said, O thou mighty man of God. He said, yeah, right. Who the hell are you? If, where, I want all the confessions of I don't have what you say I have. And the angel said, after Gideon had said all that crap, and the angel said, go in this thy might. Do any of you have any sense of what I'm talking about the glory of God? Or am I just... Can you trust me for an instant that if you had experienced or would experience the glory of God, that every other thing in your existence would fade away? Guess what? Faith says that you already, in fact, have been glorified. That the momentary experience, or hour and a half or so experience that I had, you are living in. No, never mind, don't go there. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. The word good there is the Greek word agathos. It's not the one that's called good by, like, oh, that tastes good, or that's nice, or... It comes from the word agape, which is the divine good, the selfless good, the one where you've totally and completely lost your identity and the need for you to increase or to enhance your identity. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Every time I read that or say that, about half of you say, well, I'm not the call. And the other half of you say, I don't love God. Right? When you're down at the gut level, if something's gone wrong, and I read, all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. Well, I must not be called. You know what? It's not your job to decide whether or not you're called or not. You got this strange thing about called. You want to get a phone call. You want to get a direct commission from God that says, okay, this is my job and I'm going to do this. The scriptures say that for most of you, in fact, almost all, you will remain in the calling wherein you're called. And in the midst of whatever it is, that calling simply means that which you are doing. The call is not for you to take physical action necessarily. It may be. But the call is to know that you are glorified wherever you are. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son. The word conformed is the key word. It's sumorphu, which means, it's the same word that, it's the root word that we get transfigured from. It means to assimilate together. It means so that if you took two different kinds, if you took a hunk of clay and a coloring and you molded it and mixed it and kneaded it, eventually you could not distinguish between the color and the clay. If you took leaven and mixed it into bread, eventually you reach a point where you cannot distinguish between the leaven and the bread. That's what it means. It means to assimilate. To be made conformable to the image of his son. That's the conformity to the image of his son had an end result. The end result was on his Mount of Transfiguration. We don't have to go any farther than to be transfigured. We don't have to go down back into the valley. Once the transfiguration takes place in you or in us, it's finished. Time is over. And it goes down in Romans, continuing. For whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he predestinated, them he also called. And whom he called, them he also justified. And whom he justified, them he also glorified. Past tense. The only reason that I could experience that glorification, or that out of whatever it was that I experienced, the glory of God, was that I had already been glorified. And there was a slight rip in my own flesh that caused me to be able to see it. To be able to, so it would be assimilated. That's where you are tonight. You are now at a point where it's time to see that you have been glorified. Because unless you know you already have been glorified, you'll be tossed about by every wind and wave of doctrine and the sleight of men where they lie in wait to deceive. Now, how do you get glorified? How do I experience it? You simply say, Father, that's what I want, no matter what it costs me. Father, I accept my death. There is no other purpose for your living. Now we come to a secret. Justify. You've spent a lifetime trying to justify yourselves. You've spent a lifetime trying to prove to yourself that you have a reason for existence. Well, now you are at the same point that Christ was. You're manifested in the flesh, but justified in the spirit. You don't ever, 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 ever have to worry about your own justification. Never. 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 Doesn't matter what you done, have done or not done. It doesn't matter whether you've made 1,000 mistakes or no mistakes. You never, ever once have to justify yourself again. Blessed, what we talked about in bananas the other night, in Psalm 84, blessed is the man. Let me go there so I don't make a mistake. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of thee, who passing through the valley of Baca maketh it a well. Then rain also filleth the pools. Now that we talked about, whenever you're in the valley of weeping, the first thing you do is to say, what the hell did I do to get here? What did I do wrong? Most time you did something wrong to get there. But it doesn't matter. Because the scriptures say, blessed are you. It didn't say how you got there. And the valley of Baca is the valley of weeping. If you're blessed, it means it's a unique word that means that nothing in time and space can affect you. To be blessed is to be glorified. You may not consciously know it yet, but it's only because you still have to remain under for a moment as the child remains under the discipline of the Father. But the promise is certain, the promise is sure. You can be nothing but blessed because of that's who you are. You can be nothing but glorified because that's your new genetic makeup. When you're in the valley of weeping, the first thing that you do, your mind says, what the hell did I do wrong? The next thing it does, if you didn't do anything wrong, it's the offended innocence. How could God do this to me?
That was a great analogy, but one demon over here is saying it's all my fault, and the other over here is saying someone did me wrong.
Someone did me wrong. Both of them are bullshit. Who passing through the valley. If you think you're going to live in the valley, you're dead. But who passing through the valley. Some of you have been in a valley so long that you're convinced that you've been in the valley of weeping so long you've built a cabin. You've dug a well. Put in running water, electricity, movie theater. Who passing through the valley? You're passing through to where? To one point to be glorified. It's not optional. Well, you know, I could go through all the glory scriptures. But when the tabernacle was resurrected, the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. When Solomon built the temple, the glory of the Lord filled the house. On and on and on and on. But you are the temple. You got to trust me in this one. The glory of the Lord has already filled your temple. Very simple. Revelation. 20-something or other. Revelation 21, starting in verse 21. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls, and the several gate was, and every several gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold, and it was transparent glass. And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it. And the Lamb is the light thereof. And the nations of them which are saved shall walk in the light of it. John saw that 2,000 years ago, and he wasn't seeing into the future. Let's go back to Romans. Don't go back to Romans since you're not there in the first place. What was that?
September.
Moreover, whom he did predestinate, them he also called. Whom he called, them he also justified. Whom he justified, them he also glorified. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? What shall we say to these things? What are these things? There's three ideas in these things. One, the first is the idea underlying all that we've just read, is that the suffering to be endured by those who would share the glory of Christ. Now, what form does that suffering take? It could be physical pain. It could be depression. It could be confusion. It could be any of 1,001 mental deals. It could be addiction. It could be anything. That the suffering, guess what the suffering is? It's the obedience. It's the remaining under. And it's disparaged in comparison to the glory. To remain under. So that the innocence of that seed within you is transformed into holiness by the antagonism of that which you perceive as suffering. I've told you so often that you've forgotten, but glory in the scriptures is also associated with the color or with the metal of gold. In the temple, gold is always the glory of God. There's a song that John wrote, The City of Light. Tested gold does nothing but shine. As long as your identity is on the outward ore, the quartz, then your perception of what happens to you will always and ever be, oh shit, poor me. And you will not be in obedience, you will not be remaining under, and you will do every natural trick of your life to get out from that which you perceive as negative. The instant your identity becomes the gold, then you glory in the tribulation. Because the rolling over, the acid, the rocks, the crushing of it is only there, the fire, everything else is only there to bring forth that gold. The instant your identity becomes the gold, which it does, at the instant you experience the glory of God, then nothing in time and space can touch you. There is no person that come against you. I can no longer put a trip on you. No debt, no demon from hell, not the gates of hell itself can stand against you. Yeah. As long as your identity is the false identity that's been given to you by the idiocy of this world system, which is really the quartz, which is only the container of the gold, then you will ever and always run every time you're chastened. You may not physically run, you may be here, but in your mind you will have left. And therefore you are despising the chastening of the Lord, and God says if you despise that chastening, you are bastards and not children. But once you experience just a millisecond of the glory of God, then your identity is forever changed. It can never again be on that quartz. Your identity is the gold. Therefore, you glory in tribulation. You think it not strange concerning the suffering. And all the other things that I've told you 1,000 times that you never remember. Because the quartz can never remember, oh, I'm supposed to be happy. You understand me? Most of you spent all these years trying to convince the quartz that it should be happy.
In one way, the glory, the gold is only glorified by the tribulation.
That's the only way it is.
The glorified meaning be more revealed and see more clearly the reality, because otherwise it's buried under all the stuff. So you do, there's no other thing you can do except glory in the tribulation.
That's right.
You know, I mean, that's if you see who your identity is.
What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? Now here we got another terrible translation. The word if there is the Greek word eis. It doesn't mean, it's not a conditional if, that, oh, maybe God isn't for me. The idea is, what that word, the way that should be translated, is in view of the fact, the fact that is not changeable, in view of the fact that God is for me, who or what can be against me?
Since God is for us.
Thank you, Jackie. What shall we say then to these things? If God be for us, in view of the fact that God is for us, who or what can be against us? He that spared not his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how shall he not with him also freely, without effort, give us all things? What happens at the point the quartz says, my identity is the goal? The quartz then has picked up the cross. The quartz has accepted its death penalty. Each of you are a separate grape in the spirit. And God has defined a process that's inexorable. It's called fermentation, to cause the perfection of the wine to be perfect. The wine being symbol of Egypt. I mean of Israel, excuse me. Yeah. The perfected bride, the best wine there is. The fermentation is inexorable. It happens in the grape in time. And if the grape by its own strength has managed to continue to keep the cover on the grape, then what happens internally is leprosy. And what you do in that environment, you become without value to yourself or to God. And the leprosy is evidenced by, I've told you this 100,000 times, but you never understand it. The leprosy is evidenced by your private mind talk. You sit there and commune with self is the evidence of your own leprosy. You call it shyness. You call it, oh, that's just the way I am. You call it 1,000 things, but God calls it singularly leprosy. You call it fear. You call it whatever it is. 1,000, all of the terminology. Oh, I'm just, you know, I got to think about that. Some of you are so leprous, you don't even know what I'm talking about. Because all you've ever done is mind talk. And the idea that you would be in a state other than sitting and communing with self is so foreign to you that it's like once every 10 years you might, oh God, I spurted. Above all things, my brethren, I would that you prophesy. And the word prophesy doesn't mean tell the future. It means bubble forth what's there every second, every moment. And I guarantee it'll cause you to be suffered. You'll suffer for it. But the suffering is what is the instrument of the glory. Aren't you sick of mind talk? The moment you start this process of bubbling forth what's ever there, you know, I'm just prophesying, brother, and somebody else is going to say, well, I'm just flushing. You don't judge for yourself what's the value of that which is being prophesied. Because the instant you do that, you have put the Antichrist back in command. Oh, I'm just a new believer. I can't say anything. Well, you... Oh, if I say something, oh, he'll jump on me. If you don't, God's going to jump on you. And I'm a pussycat. What?
Deposed pussycat.
It's God calling.
Well, sorry, wrong number.
What shall we say to these things? What shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? In view of the fact that God is for us, it's impossible for anyone to be against us. It's impossible. Do you understand? Ice, in view of the fact that God is for you. Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It is God only that justifieth. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died. Now what in the hell, do you understand the connection? Who is he that condemneth or judgeth? It is Christ that died. Tell me something that you can condemn me for. Tell me something you can condemn yourself for. Tell me something you can judge yourself for. Tell me something you can judge another person for. It is Christ that died. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, rather that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God and also maketh intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword, or my mind? Please understand me. I am not kidding you when I say that if you are not in a position where you are prophesying, your mind is lying to you. I mean, it's not a matter of if, because when you're not prophesying, you are believing the lie. When you are not bubbling forth exactly what's there, your mind says, your mind is making a judgment about the situation. And you're trying to be God's counselor. All right. Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword, as it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. What the hell is the tie in there? Of course you're going to be killed if you prophesy. Of course the quartz is going to get stepped on. Of course there's going to be acid thrown on the quartz. Of course it's going to happen. We are killed all the day long. Don't come complaining to me about your problems. What the hell did you expect? No, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus, which is in us. I beg of you, accept your death, that you might see the glory. You only know you've accepted your death when you mourn for yourself. Otherwise, you can play intellectual games. Whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate to be conformed to the image of his Son. That's what we're here for, folks. Amen?
I died, and I sighed as the chains of the flesh left me, as the moans and the groans of the friends sent me on my way to the land of the dead. I flashed that my soul was unharmed as my earth for my shed, that the image of death had been a thought in my head, and the truth is a spirit am I. I sussed that my life had been a lesson chosen by me, for to purify my thought that I may be worthy to shine forth the light. The love vibes, they met me and they cast off my fright. Those great souls of ages long past, I praise the great souls of the ages who care for our needs. They lovingly nurture bright seed growing the way to the light. I ached for the womb and the earth and another time around, seeking circumstances the best that can be found to give. Was born